So you're, this is what you do with it.
Yeah. You actually write 2012.
The children. Yeah, I'm going to record the ideas you've just expressed. This is so you're actually. Let me summarize back to you.
Take your princess story.
Yeah.
Right. And use that as an illustration of a method. Define the method. Start with the result. A very healthy, long-term engagement with your child.
That's the result. Every parent wants that.
Desired outcome.
So there's a huge market for that end result.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's the hook. If that's on the poster above your book or above your CD, bees to honey, right? All right. So that's part of the marketing ploy. But the key to this is turning what you've done, analysing it back, as you've already started to do, into a method. Taking the key points of the prompting, the rules that you have, the leading, the way you ask your question, the way you challenge by taking something off the table that the child has to put back on.
Yeah.
And then
like, let's not go to Galway at all.
Okay. Right? There's your chapter, right? Let's not. Okay? Let's not. And that is a chapter in the book about what effect you create with that. That you lead them there to the water and you take the water away, thereby creating a sense of loss, thereby reinforcing their desire to have it in there, forcing them to articulate their
desire. Challenging their determination
Set that.
Yeah.
And when they actually succeed in determining what happens, they get an achievement. They've won.
They have a greater sense of ownership over the narrative.
Because they've decided to go
all the
way.
It is.
Oh, yeah.
And it becomes.
And I'm delighted, of course, but I haven't.
Yeah.
And it becomes their
How
story.
How to raise a non-compliant child.
The headline is the bit that you don't work at all. You don't have to work at that part. Depends on how far into this you go. But the point being that all of your actions are about allowing the child to create a narrative that they own.
That all of the storyteller's actions are allowing the child to determine a narrative
is
that
the
they
wrong
own.
Word. Yeah. But you're challenging it for robustness along the way, and they're putting the nails into each part of the story, saying, "I want that bit in there." And storytelling is a tool for exercising so many life skills. That what actually happens, the goal of having an excellent long-term high-quality communication with your children just happens because of the style of engagement, the intimacy in going back and forth there, albeit about nothing practical day-to-day. It's simply establishing in the child that I can chat away to my dad about anything, absolutely anything, in comfort, in safety, without ridicule, in a completely safe environment. And I don't, and setting that communication up then should mean that for later challenges in life, that to establish the dialogue can happen very quickly. Yeah.
So you're saying teenage life for children. I just want to get this bit. The life of an adult coping with a teenager is going to be helped immeasurably.
Yeah.
Well, Patricia has told me something years ago, which I, have faith in because it hasn't happened yet, because of the age of my children. But that once you establish a method of communicating and resolving conflict, resolving difficulties with your child, either directly with you or between themselves, if you establish a protocol for how we deal with those, that while the vocabulary may change as they get older, the actual process will stay the same. If you are firm in sort of disciplinary things, when you then say, when they're 14, you're grounded or whatever it is, that won't get challenged because you've consistently done that along the way and you've illustrated to them why that is an appropriate course of action. And they understand what they can challenge and say, no, that's not fair, and they understand they'll get hurt. And still.
And when they are naturally uninclined to abide by the ruling that you've just made, that's it, you're grounded. Because they're going to resist that, because they are in their mode of what I call "I want what I want when I want it," and they're in their mode. When the structure that you pull on in order to be firm and to have them abide by your firmness and say, "Yeah, I know you don't like it. I'm sorry that it has to be this way, but I'm afraid it is because this is how we do things," and what you draw on then is the depth of the relationship that has been formed at the other times in your parenting career that are non-disciplinarian. What gives them the impetus to even give you the time of day when they're teenagers is what you have invested in the relational aspect, which is the time spent together with no agenda, such as you're just talking about now with your storytelling. I learned, and I always use the example, when I used to teach at Pino in the evenings and I used to come home and Jim oftentimes would be in bed and Melissa was the first bedroom and she would hear the garage door close. And she would hear, "Hi, Mom," and she would be maybe 12, 13. "Hi, Mom." And I thought, ooh, invitation to enter, pretty cool. I would put my hand on the doorknob and I would stop and I would say to myself, "Okay, Hoyt, close mouth, shut your mouth. This is not a time to be advisory mother or shocked mother or improvement mother or analysis mother. This is not that. This is hanging out time. Shut your mouth and find 50 different ways to say,
I love it. Yeah.
And I had to remind myself to do that because I'm a
It takes a while.
Time,
if you're not
type,
used to doing
right,
that, that's
and
really
I had to
hard.
Blue mouth shut and then, "Hi, babe." And then go in, open the door, go in, and it was hanging out time. And my rule was, no matter what you hear tonight in her bedroom while she's chatting to you, even if it is, "Mom, tomorrow I'm going to go out and get pregnant," no matter what it is, the answer is, because this is hanging out time. You have to let 24 hours go by before you say, "You know, I was thinking a little bit about something that you shared with me yesterday, and I'm wondering if you'd be interested in some feedback on that." Because now you've had 24 hours to get by. And one time I actually heard whatever it was, and it was like, "Oh, good." And the next day I said that, and she said, "Oh, yeah, I thought about that, Mom. That's a bad idea. I'm not going to do that." I walked away, said no more. I did not say, "Oh, thank God," because I was worrying about that. Because that would.
Why didn't you? Every parent I can think of almost would have said, "Oh, thank goodness. I was going to tell you, by the way, you should not do that." And the next minute they're into
counterproductive.
Yeah, but why did you? What taught you not to do that? What taught you not to do that? Because I know not to do that now. Right?
I honestly think I learned it in parenting classes.
Really?
I honestly think I learned it in parenting classes.
You had a good teacher.
I went to parenting classes for 6 years. Every other Wednesday, even when I went back to work part-time when the kids were young, I started the September after Christopher was born, and I went for 6 years. And even when I went part-time, I used to say, "I'm not available every other Wednesday morning to work. I'm sorry, I have my parenting class. I can't miss it."
And you were going as a student to learn to be a parent?
Yes, and then I became the chairwoman of that, of the organizing volunteer group who organized the parenting chapter. And it was that that led me to say yes to the family ministry job at the parish, which is why I went back to get my master's, which is all of...
The rest is history.
Yeah, it was that. When the kids sent me that funny little video for my 58th birthday, one of the things on there is parenting classes, parenting classes, parenting classes, you know.
Because, I haven't seen that.
Yeah. You didn't see it?
I don't think so.
Magnificent, yeah.
I bawled like a baby.
Yeah, yeah.
So I bawled like a baby. I was on Google chat with the kids. It was my birthday. It was a Sunday, and Jim was away, so I was alone in the house. And the kids said, Melissa and Rebecca were in Chicago, and... they said, Mom, we want to call you for your birthday and have breakfast with you. So we do this. We have breakfast there on the laptop, on Skype or Google. And so I'm sitting there and I'm chatting with them. And they say, okay, Mom. Melissa said, I just sent you a link to Vimeo.
Yes, Vimeo. Yes, I know Vimeo.
And she said, and you have to watch it while we're watching you.
Because they want to watch you watching
yeah, exactly,
it. Oh, that's
right.
So... I know a guy who does that on Audible. He actually films...
He films
my,
since I've watched...
Nick Holloway Vox.
I've watched him. I've watched him listening to you.
It's stunning to watch somebody listening to yourself.
Yeah.
Because you watch every flicker in his eye.
Yeah.
I mean, when he's sitting there, sometimes he does it by... Without even moving.
Yes,
you know,
I noticed
for
that.
The entire 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And you're watching, you know... Will he, there be a slightest trace of a crease in the mouth?
Yeah.
Other times he does it while he's making tea. Go on.
So they sent me this link to the Vimeo, and they had made a video of themselves talking to each other on computer. Hey, it's Mom's birthday. What shall we do for her? And hey, I have an idea. How about we send her one great thing that she has done for us? And one for every year that she's alive. And the other, then there's a video with Christopher writing back on his computer. Yeah, great idea. Here's one, you know. And he starts off something like, just because delivering a Macbeth soliloquy does not make you a nerd or something like that. Because I had helped him get over his hesitations one time about delivering a Macbeth soliloquy instead of doing a poster for his Macbeth presentation. As he said, I think I'm going to memorize Macbeth's speech, and is this a dagger I see before me? And so he memorized it and he ran it off for me, and he said, is that good, Mom? And I said, you really know it. That's it's obvious you really know it, and you can say it like that, or you can recite it. You can be theatrical.
You can be Macbeth.
And he said, yes, I think that's what I said. And he said, but they laugh at me. And I said, yes, they will. Until you outlast them. And you outlast their laughs, and they will move to, oh my gosh.
Oh my God.
And he did. And
he did it.
And he did it. He did it.
Jeez.
It was so cool.
I'm not surprised. Surprised that they remembered
cool.
that.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was
that
cool.
is life changing.
I didn't know that he would remember that. So that was very.
But
cool.
how did you realize?
Yeah.
This is the thing that gets me. I mean, this could we could go on.
Because I've lived that one.
How
myself.
Did you know? Is that out of your own experience that you will outlast the laughs?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It's like get a load of her, and then, oh wow, she's sticking with this. This is for real. People have to know that you're convinced of the authenticity of your endeavor.
Do you remember Uncle Hugh as a tenor?
Yes.
Do you remember sitting around listening to this man singing in this peculiar voice when you were a kid?
Yeah.
I don't know how you reacted, but I used to kind of be embarrassed for him.
I probably was for
I
a while,
actually
but
used,
he outlasted
I was closer.
It.
Well, exactly. Yeah. By the time you realized that he could sustain, you know, what was the piece of Mozart, that wonderful piece? It doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah,
the main thing is you could sing Panis Angelicus, for example, and you know, it went on, and the breath control went on, and it began as a laugh, and you thought, oh my God, he's gonna
he's
burst.
He's not gonna stop.
He's not gonna stop.
Yeah,
you
that's
know.
Right. Yeah.
And.
So that was the first one on there. But then back to the video, then they had another. That's the only reason I know how old I am right now, is because I had a list of 58 things on there. There was a preponderance of references to wine. Two Buck Chuck is the way to go. That's the $2.99 bottle of wine that we buy most commonly in our household. And then there was drink in moderation, so you can drink forever. That's one of mine.
Ooh, I like that one.
And there were references to sit on your hands, because that's what I used to tell them when they were in the car and they were fighting with each other, and the disciplinary technique was, well, sit on your hands, and somehow it silenced them.
This is a list of wisdoms from Mom.
Yeah.
Now, you know I mentioned listly earlier.
A bit like that.
We could have a list of wisdoms my mom, you know, or dad or whatever, you know. back to this thing. You're back to the business of storytelling. You're saying, if I've got it right, with the end in view, the end is ultra desirable by just about every parent, right? Yeah. You've got all this material in the form of stories, which are there to illustrate method. The key thing is to clarify and make available to people the what lies behind the stories, which is the storytelling method. The technique.
When somebody has read your book or listened to it, they should be able to sit down with their children and do what you do to have produced The Princess Chronicles.
Yes.
And
with no fear.
With no fear, with a sort of a toolkit for every situation to help them work on particular aspects of their relationship or on aspects of their child's development that they want to concentrate on that's age appropriate.
Yes.
So you could have esteem issues that you're dealing with. You could have
industry issues.
You could have food issues. You could have all sorts of things.
I've got all those issues in the story so far.
Now you can point them out.
So every one of those issues, becomes a chapter.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm talking about the greedy commercial side of things.
What
you want is you want someone to pick up the book.
Yeah.
The title catches them because, okay, that's Nirvana, that's just, you know. And then each chapter deals with a particular aspect that's a challenge for parents and a challenge for children in their development.
And there are audio illustrations as you go along.
It would include examples of ways. So if your child has esteem issues, then your hero in the story may either have esteem issues or may meet somebody who has esteem issues and help them overcome that.
There's a book that was published by a small printing outfit, publishing outfit in northern Michigan called Treehouse Publications. The book is out of print. It's called Stories They'll Remember by Frank K. Lord. I remember it as clear as a bell.
It's an easy name to remember, Frank K. Lord.
K.
All right.
Lord. Yeah. And it's a very small little book, and he's a physician, actually, and he recommends these stories, this storytelling for children, based on what their developmental needs are, a la Piaget-type stuff and Kohlberg and that, what their developmental needs are at different stages. So they're dealing with self-esteem, as Pete said, or industry versus being discouraged, for example, at different stages. And you want to help their moral development move along. And he recommends particular types of stories for all of these different levels. He has an interesting comment that he makes about storytelling for teenagers. And he says, be careful storytelling with teenagers. If they suspect that you are storytelling with them for their own good, they will try to sabotage the story. So he said the best thing to do with storytelling for teenagers is to story tell to each other, say spouses at the kitchen sink, washing up after dinner, talking with, I did this with Jim. I tried it out. We story told about when I was driving and when I was not safe as a driver, and I can't believe I ran into that car one time, or I can't believe, remember that time and you told me, oh my gosh, and we were telling each other these stories, knowing that they would be eavesdropping on our stories without us attaching any teaching agenda. Remember, the stories always have to be given, well, you know that, freely given, no strings attached, you know. But that actually sideways storytelling, as I call it, is more helpful for the teenage years.
The relevance of this, incredible relevance of this conversation to me, is that not that very long ago I got this idea, and I've shared it on audiobook, which you won't have heard because it's so far back in the stream. But it basically is, I raised the question about whether there should be a special channel or something like it for a storytelling for children. Right, so I'm not sure what it would be, whether it would be parents and children doing like Grace and I together. Mm-hmm. But this whole thing, and quite a number of people have weighed in, and there seems to be a consensus. Mm-hmm. Nobody's clear yet about how to do it. Mm-hmm. And there have been a number of issues raised around it. But there seems to be a number of people have said to each other, this is a great idea, right? There is a good, there's a thing about storytelling for children, with children, out there waiting to be designed. And, and this conversation, which we now have to stop, and we're in the last 20 seconds of this. So, Pete, you give us the last word on the topic since you let us in.
Do it.
Do it, he said.
Do it.
Good night.